As we put together this symposium, we need to talk about the role of the CAP. So we keep talking about these CAP grants. And so what I'd like to do is just spend a little bit of time just reviewing what they are and maybe why they are. I think is also maybe an interesting question to answer. So first of all, what is a CAP? We keep talking about it. All right, so here's all of our, you know, abbreviations. But so it's a USDA, NEPA, AFRI. Everyone knows what those are, right? So the CAP is Coordinated Agriculture Project, and so they're a type of AFRI grant. And so the point of it was, from the USDA's funding perspective, right, was that they wanted to create something that was a bit prescriptive in nature. They wanted to include all of these things in the grant. So we had to have things that were measurement-related, modeling-related, had to have life cycle assessment, and had to have an education and extension portion of the grants. And so these CAP grants then fit in with the different project areas. And so the ones that the grazing CAP and the dairy CAP that I'm talking about are focused on climate change. Now, they also need to be transdisciplinary in nature, and also they came with longer time periods of funding. So instead of the typical 2 to 3 years, these were 5-year funded projects. So why focus on animal agriculture and greenhouse gas emissions? So if we look at the different animal agriculture sectors and look in terms of the CO2 equivalents produced, beef and dairy cattle are by far the top two. So they're obviously the first ones to start with. So thus, if we're going to address climate change mitigation and adaptation, we want to focus on dairy and beef production. And so we all have our each logos, so I'll be talking about mostly about the Sustainable Dairy Project, but also highlight some of the aspects of the Great Plains Grazing Project as well. So why dairy? So just get everyone kind of thinking about dairy production. The other aspect of these grants is they needed to be regional in scope. And so if we think about where the dairy cows are, so this is the great state of Wisconsin, covered completely with cows. And so we focused on the northwest or the northeast sector, so we call it the Great Lakes region. So working primarily in Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, New York as places where we're doing most of our field-based research. Overall, we had 30 PIs and 13 institutions that were involved with the project, Penn State, Cornell, and Wisconsin being the main land grants, but then also connecting a lot with our industry partners, so the Innovation Center for U.S. Dairy, where they also had products, they had their own sustainability initiatives, and so can collaborate with them on that. But we've got other group, University of Arkansas, Maryland, and then even some non-land grant institutions to do other work in life cycle assessment. Now if you switch over to beef production, so looking at in Oklahoma and Kansas, you can see we have a map here of one dot is 10,000 cattle per dot, so you can see that there's quite a few beef cows in these states. So this is the location of the grazing CAP. And so the Great Plains Grazing.org is their website, and there it's Oklahoma State, Kansas State as the two primary land grants that are conducting the work, but collaborating with other institutions as well. And I should notice, so they've got USDA listed at the ARS and the dairy CAP as well. We've got ARS partners, so it's not just land grants; it's also the ARS groups. But what this slide also highlights is some of the things I haven't mentioned. It's also economists, it's also climatologists, it's also rural sociologists that are involved in both of these projects. So when we talk about it being transdisciplinary, it's trying to get the engineers talking with the physical scientists, talking with the biological scientists, talking with the economists and the social scientists. So along those lines, that's what the USDA was trying to do, and we hope that we delivered that for them. Now, are there strategic advantages of the CAPs, right? So why would the USDA want to fund projects like this? So from a dairy production system perspective, I think that there's two things that we were able to do is one, to conduct science that connects the parts of the system. So if you're working, and we talk about complex science, we're working across different parts of systems that are typically studied individually. And two is we can use that and to develop BMPs that we can use across these other types of projects, modeling, climate modeling, life cycle assessment, maybe economic modeling, extension program development, and have some consensus and consistency, and have have many different ways of looking at the same thing. So I have this graph up here to highlight the complexity of the dairy production system. This is not even, this represents the manure management portion of a dairy production in Wisconsin. So we have, all these things are connected. So you have the type of housing that the cows are in. So if it's free stall or tie stall, and based on the type of housing, there would be different ways that manure could be collected. It could be scraped, it could be have a slotted floor, a skid steer. Then once that's collected, it can be either processed or stored. And so we've got our options for processing, no processing, liquid solid separation, anaerobic digestion, storage, long-term versus short-term storage, and then it's going to be land applied. So, and then how is that going to be land applied? So you think about all the connections, and this is based on survey work to see what the connection of going from like housing to collection is. And you can just imagine all the interactions that are happening here. So there's many, many different ways to manage manure on dairy farms in Wisconsin, and that's what this graph represents. Okay, so but now that we have a good handle on this through our work, we know which ones are most common, which ones are commonly used, which ones are connected to the other ones. The other thing we can do is we can start to trace the effects through the dairy production system. So we can conduct studies where we have we do feeding trials with cows, and we put them in these chambers. So we feed the cows different things. And we measure the milk production, we measure the manure, we measure the methane coming out of those chambers. But as we look at the effects of feeding at this level, what about the effects as it's downstream? What about if you take that manure and store it? What if you take that manure and land apply it? Are there trade-offs? Are there things that we're not accounting for? Or do we get even additional benefits in reduction of greenhouse gases through the system? And then you can also take it through we can measure greenhouse gases through the anaerobic digestion and solid separation phases, then take that, store it or not, and then land apply it, and then keep connecting these parts of the system. And so I think having this CAP structure helped us to create projects like this. And then one of perhaps the biggest thing is this, forced collaboration, or it forced us to collaborate. And that's not a negative thing, but it made us sit down and talk to each other in ways that we probably wouldn't have. And if we have if we can all sit down together, animal scientists and ag engineers and soil scientists with the scientists that they're experts in the biophysical models and people that are conducting the life cycle assessment, and come up with this idea of, well, what are the management practices that reduce greenhouse gas emissions, but how many can we put into a life cycle assessment study or model comparison study? What are the main ones that we need to focus on? Are the practices actually inputs into the model? So if we think of something like cow comfort, that would improve efficiency. But there's no input value for cow comfort in a biophysical model, right? So things like that, we had to sit down and hash through and then think about details of what does a baseline farm look like and create things around that. Then we can think about the practices and combinations of practices that we can include in modeling and life cycle assessment research. And we did, and so we can create things like this. So we have three parts of a dairy production system conceptually here. So we have the feed management component, we've got the manure management component, and the land management component. So for feed management, we have six scenarios that we thought would have the highest impact in terms of the types of feed and the forage and rotation, digestibility, and those sort of things. We selected four types of manure management practices: liquid solid separation, digestion, the combination of both, flaring lagoons, and then different field scenarios such as cover cropping, double cropping, no-till, and so forth. Then we can conduct things like this. In this example, we use the IFSM, the Integrated Farm System Model, run by USDA ARS, it's Al Ross's model. And so what we can look at is we can conduct this baseline analysis and get all the different components, enteric methane, N2O, indirect N2O, manure N2O, all the sources of the greenhouse gases. Here this is the carbon footprint and CO2 equivalents. And then we can look at it if we change each individual factor at one time. And then we can decide among these factors, we can put them together and create a whole farm scenario where we can look at which one will have a meaningful reduction in our carbon footprint. So in this example, using comparing all these things, and so we have some improvements in feed efficiency, manure digestion certainly helps. You combine those factors, and we can have a 36% reduction in the CO2 equivalent production from our dairy production systems. Now, we can also take that same scenario to try to minimize greenhouse gas emissions and apply it to the reactive nitrogen footprint, phosphorus losses, and net return. And so, as you can see, we have, once we look at this whole farm scenario, we're seeing we also see concurrently a 41% reduction in reactive nitrogen, a 52% reduction in phosphorus losses, and a 20% increase in profitability. So that's dollars per cow. So what this represents to me is that there are, the dairy production system is complex, but there's also a lot of hidden inefficiencies in it, right? And so once you start to improve efficiencies at the feed level, and you're getting more, you're getting less greenhouse gas emissions per kilogram of milk, but then you're also perhaps increasing the amount of milk you're producing. And so ultimately we can achieve a reduction in greenhouse gases and an increase in profitability. And if you're interested, these were the five that were selected. So it was a combination of feed management practices that we kind of agglomerated into one practice. This paper is in review, and there's a lot of detail in it. But then we can also create scenarios or different strategies where, well, here we go. Here we have some, like a first strategy is where we have we're looking for a high return on investment, or so high profitability, and we can still get about a 25% reduction in our nitrogen and carbon footprint. In others, we can have if we're trying to push that a little bit more and get a higher reduction in carbon and nitrogen, but we get still an increase in net return, but a little bit less. So there's always a little bit of trade-offs there on that side of thing. Then the climatologists can take this kind of thing and run it through the climate models. And so perhaps one of the more interesting things that they found is based on using some of these strategies, based on small farms or large farms, and assuming the number of dairy cows stays the same, and assuming all the dairy farms in the world take our advice, by the year 2100, we would see a 7% reduction in greenhouse gas emissions. So that's including everything. So, but what's more interesting is the fact that it showed up at all in these climate models. So the fact that if we change these management practices to reduce greenhouse gas emissions from dairy and improve profitability, it has a measurable effect on the climate. So it is possible to do something. And if it, you know, we can think this is, it's a case study example, but it's meaningful. What we can do will be impactful. So, and if you're interested in more, that's work from Chris Forrest out of Penn State. So I think, in summary, the CAPS bring together scientists across disciplines. It allows us to connect parts of the system together and work together to create these BMPs. And I'm sure the grazing CAP has similar success stories. But I think that the main thing is we believe that the CAP approach was valuable. It allowed us to create things that we just wouldn't have done otherwise through a more traditional and shorter time period structure. So with that, I'm happy if there's time, a minute for questions or two.
Thank you, Matt.
All right, thanks.